WTLC AM, W224 DI, W236 CR Indianapolis. It's time to discuss the important topics happening in and around Indy. It's Community Connection with Tina Cosby, brought to you by Child Advocates. Your voice, their future on AM 1310, 92.7, 95.1 FM, The Light.
And good afternoon and welcome to Community Connection. I'm Tina Cosby. Today is Thursday, August the 25th. And on our show today, our sports contributor from the Indianapolis Recorder, Danny Bridges, is back. We'll discuss a number of things, including the Recorder's newly appointed editor-in-chief. There's a new one over there. Hopefully we'll get to meet him soon. Also today, we're going to take a closer look at President Biden's student loan forgiveness program that was announced yesterday. We got to it on the wee end of our show just yesterday, including hopefully we're going to be able to bring in a high-ranking official with the United Negro College Fund who may be able to weigh in on that as well. We are still efforting that as we speak. So hopefully we can get him in as well. In some other developments, another deadly shooting at a school bus stop, this one in Greenwood, Johnson County, where a Whiteland High School student, a 16-year-old, was gunned down this morning, shot several times. The question remains, when will it end and who can stop it? We're going to let you weigh in on that as well, and we're going to ask a couple of other questions regarding that. But first, we're going to start the show on a positive, hopeful note today. Tomorrow morning at Martin University, a draft is going to get underway. It's a draft where hundreds of young people are going to get paid after. It's a draft. You get paid. But it's not an athletic draft, but rather an educational one. Quite creative and quite unique. So here with more on Martin University's second annual draft day is Tony Cunningham. Tony is Martin University's Director of Career Development. Tony, welcome to Community Connection. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. This is really intriguing, and it's exciting. I guess when I first read about it, I'm like, yeah, this is something that we need to do more of or need to give more exposure to. So tell us more about what we're talking about.
Yeah, so just to kind of give you a little bit of background, over the past few weeks in our Martin Works program, it's a leadership academy that we've housed in our summer session. We discuss topics relevant to creating a higher level of business competency and workforce readiness. And so now that we've kind of finished that up, we're now in our selection phase. And this is where employer partners and their organizations come in and give these students an opportunity to come on board as an apprentice. And as opposed to just doing the traditional, you know, go interview and we'll find you a place or here's a typical internship, we wanted to really make sure we capitalized the excitement about transitioning from what you do in class to what the real world is asking. And so we've asked these employers to come in and actually participate in the academy. And then they get to draft the students that they actually speak to into their organizations. And so we've got a number of employers that are going to come in, and we've got the stage set up. They're going to get swag bags. There's a signing table, the whole bang. We're just really going to do it up for these students. And so some of the students actually know where they're going, and some don't. Just like you would, you know, in the NFL draft or in our NBA draft. Some people know, some don't, which, you know, creates more excitement. And but they're encouraged to bring their family, friends, you know, other folks, alumni that may be attached to the school to come and celebrate with them. So we're looking forward to this event tomorrow.
Yeah, and so much like an athletic draft, these kids get paid.
Yes, they do. The actual apprenticeship is definitely paid, and they work up to 20 hours, typically in the $18 range. But they have the opportunity to negotiate with the employer once they get in and get established to be hired on either permanently or at least be on a pathway to be hired on permanently.
So what's the age range of these youngsters?
So, you know, Martin University is a non-traditional school. Mm-hmm. So typically, the students that come through here are in the 25 and up range. So we've got students that are in that 25 range, but we've also got students that are in the 60-year-old range and up. So, you know, we don't discriminate there. We want you to come in and actually showcase the skills that you've learned in class and, you know, get an opportunity to go really contribute to these companies.
And you know what? It's kind of amazing, regardless of the age group, how much knowledge people out there, young people, middle-aged, older Americans have of how an NFL draft or an MLB draft or an NBA draft, how that draft works, but have no knowledge about the importance of networking, the finer parts or finer aspects of networking, and so on and so forth, that this draft introduces and makes quite clear.
Definitely. We want to highlight that. You know, we want to encourage that we have students that are capable of contributing. And to be honest with you, this process that we're going through really, I think, is a new way of, you know, providing an employee that's ready-made for the leadership mm-hmm. workforce yeah. that's out there that's needed.
Yeah, and it's just so odd that we can understand so much about something that doesn't affect us. Not really, most right. of us. I mean, what is it, 1% of talented athletes, male and female, you know, because women get yeah. drafted and they actually get to take advantage of this. But almost all of us have to work every day. And yet and still, we don't know anything about networking, career development, things of that nature. And so this is so very important, and I guess the vehicle through which it's being presented, I think, is so very creative because it helps connect the dots and underscore the importance of everything that this draft entails and everything that needs to be done in the job market.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We've got an element to the actual event where we do open up, you know, to let everybody network prior to the actual ceremony, and that we encourage all of our community partners and program enthusiasts that really are enjoying this program mm-hmm. and the growth of it to come and network and just kind of, you know, participate in this program to give the students really and alumni an opportunity to connect with businesses and community leaders that are a part of this program.
You know, and that's also very important, Mr. Cunningham, because, you know, a lot of people say it, but it just rings true more often than not. A lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times, it's not exactly what you know, but who you know. So you have all your knowledge, you have all that together, you know, you got it. But yeah. Do you know the right people? Do you know the right paths? Do you know who to connect with and who not to, you know, do you know how to, you know, make the connections just for future use, not necessarily for right now, but for future use? It's all, you know, it's all connected there.
Yeah, and the beauty of this whole program is that we've got people that have been out of the workforce, you know, for a number of years and came back to Martin to get a degree, to get mm-hmm. back into mm-hmm. it. And there's some success stories that you'll find out tomorrow. We're going to be
broadcasting. Yeah, I was going to ask you about some of your stories. Yeah, so tell us about some of the success stories.
Yeah. So we've got one lady that came through. She's probably been out of the market for about 10 to 12 years.
Oh, my.
Right. So, you know, in the real world, because my background is in human resources, I was there for 24 years, and I've seen it happen where people just go, what were you doing in this gap? And this resume has a big gap. What were you doing? And nobody has an explanation for it, right? And most times that will weed you out in regards to getting a job. And what we've done is we've taught our students how to utilize their soft skills, their volunteerism, all the things they've done that they feel that matters, making it look like it matters on paper, which is what really matters to a lot of these talent acquisition people. So we want to teach people to sell themselves at the highest level possible to get those leadership positions. And so we've got a lot of those stories that will be coming out tomorrow. But I'm just so looking forward to the events and seeing everybody's faces and the excitement that we'll have tomorrow.
So how many people are going to be participating tomorrow?
Wow. So this year we've got 20 graduates that are going to be participating, along with some alumni that will be coming back that were graduates of the program last year. This is a two-year program now, and so they'll be participating as well. So we've got about 40 employers that are going to be coming in and joining us in the celebration, and we've invited more. So we're looking for a big crowd tomorrow.
Did you find it difficult to engage the private sector in this program and with Martin University?
You know, initially, I think there was some challenges in regards to communicating the ideal of it. But once we got out there and started connecting with the community and showing them the results, they started to say, yeah, you know what, this is the new way. You know, apprenticeships, internships is really the way to go to give yourself an opportunity while you're in school to get the experience. And when you come out, you're ready made.
Yeah. Yeah. So you say this is a 2-year program. Right.
Yeah, this is our second year. Last year, we had about 15 graduates, and we were able to place about 92% of those individuals into apprenticeships. And we've got a number of success stories. We still have people that are working currently. Some graduated and moved on and moved into their curriculums that they were studying. But we've got about 3 of the of our graduates last year that are full-time in leadership roles that I don't think they were expecting. We're talking director roles and first-time positions that have never been done before. So there's a lot of good stuff coming out of the program.
So are a lot of the opportunities in basically the same industries, or is there a variety?
Oh, yeah. We've tried to expand our connection to the community via what our curriculums are. We have 11 curriculums here at Martin, and we've intentionally went out to try to collect information and connect with businesses in all industries, whether it be healthcare, whether it be business, whether it be psychology, addiction counseling. We've tried to connect all those industries to the actual academy.
Yeah. And so you say this is a 2-year program, this is a second year. Any carryover from COVID where you've had to make adjustments, or is COVID a non-factor at this point? The pandemic, was it a non-factor at this point?
Well, I would say that it was a factor, but like any organization that's trying to move forward, we had to adapt. And utilizing Zoom and team meets and things like that, we were able to still connect with those community leaders and showcase what we had here in the facility.
Okay, so if someone was interested in this program, what do they need to do? And then we can also talk about when the actual draft is. That's tomorrow morning, yeah. Tomorrow, okay.
It is, yeah. If you're interested, log on to martin.edu. You'll see a little link on there at the top that says Martin Works. Click on that. We want you to be a part of Martin University. Most of the students that come through are sophomores in that range for their education status. But you can transfer in, come off the street. We'll take all. Mm-hmm. And we'll get you to where you need to be in order for you to connect with these businesses.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay. Now, the actual event, the actual ceremony, so to speak, the draft,
yeah.
That's tomorrow. Tell us about where that's going to be. When, you know, tell us about the details.
Yeah, so come to Martin University. We'll be in the Gavatorium. It's at 2186 North Sherman Drive in the 46218 area code. We'll start about 11:30 registering folks, and the actual event will start at about noon. And please, if you come, you know, make sure you sign in at the front desk so we know who you are and so we can have somebody connect with you at whatever level you are, whatever condition you are. We want to come talk to you.
So this draft, unlike others, the traditionals, everybody goes off the board, right? Everybody comes off.
Yeah. And so what's interesting about that is that we have some of our what we consider first round draft choices, which is right.
Okay. See, I didn't even get into the rounds. I just assumed it was all one round. So how many rounds are you going to do?
We'll probably do a couple rounds.
Okay.
A couple rounds. Yeah, we have different segments what we're trying to do is get everybody placed the first day if we can. But second, you know, day 2 and day 3, we look at folks that or maybe in a different space, entrepreneurial space, mm-hmm. that we maybe want to be a little bit more cautious and protect, you know, how they step into that, make sure they have all the tools they need to be successful. So some of those individuals take a little bit longer to get going. But nonetheless, they'll come celebrate and participate in the program.
All righty, Tony Cunningham. Thank you so very much, and congratulations. Like I said, this one just made me smile. I think it's an absolutely fantastic program, and much continued success to you all with doing that. Draft day is tomorrow, right?
Yes.
All righty. Okay, and then if you want to find out more about becoming a part of this program, you go to martin.edu, correct?
That is correct.
And click on Martin Works.
Martin Works.
Okay, I got it. I think I heard what you said. Okay. All righty. Well, congratulations and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. And again, that is Tony Cunningham, Martin University's Director of Career Development. It's just nice to start off a conversation on a positive note. And they're doing some really, really positive things over there at Martin. And congratulations to them. I love that. I love the concept. I love the concept of fitting in job readiness, workforce readiness, real life skills, networking, things of that nature that so many of us desperately need at various stages in our lives, not just young people, but all of us. And draft day tomorrow sets an example for a number of other educational institutions as far as creative, positive ways to connect with the community, with the private sector, with their students to help celebrate and educate our learners, whatever their age. So that, again, is it's just interesting. And if you're interested, you can go to martin.edu and look for Martin Works, and you can find out more about that program. And again, this draft pays everybody. Everybody gets paid, and everybody comes off the board. So unlike the NFL or the NBA or WNBA or what have you, nobody's left. So, again, thank you all for that. So we are, let's take a quick break right here, Ethan, and come back. I'm going to open up the phone lines for a little bit here. 317-239-1310, 317-239-1310. Police on the south side in Johnson County are working a deadly shooting at a school bus stop. Going to ask some interesting questions about that. Not the questions that you might think, though. We'll be right back right after this.
Let's get back to the conversation. It's Community Connection with Tina Cosby from Isaacs and Isaacs Injury Lawyers, WeWin.com Studios on AM 1310, 92.7, 95.1 FM, The Light.
And welcome back to Community Connection. In continuing with our show, as I said a few moments ago, phone lines are open, 317-239-1310, 317-239-1310, or you can tweet us at Community Indy. As I was saying earlier in the show, investigators are working, sadly, another deadly shooting, this one at a school bus stop this morning in Greenwood. The victim has been identified by authorities. I believe what I understand the name to be is 16-year-old Tamario Stokes Jr. As a result, area schools were locked down shortly after. We now understand that a possible suspect in that shooting has been located, and we understand that it's believed the victim, who was shot several times, was targeted. So there doesn't appear to be any ongoing threat to the community or to nearby schools. There doesn't appear to be. Again, this shooting took place in Greenwood, in Johnson County, Whiteland High School students. And I say that because if anyone thinks that deadly gun violence among young people is limited to Center Township here in Indianapolis, on the east side of Indianapolis, or anywhere else in the city of Indianapolis, as it's so often pushed aside, they're sadly mistaken. It is everywhere. It is an epidemic. And anyone who thinks otherwise hasn't been on this planet ever. I would say the last 50 or 60 years, but come on, for a long time. 317-239-1310, 317-239-1310, or tweet us at Community Indy. We've asked the question a gazillion times, what is it going to take or when will it end? Those questions, I shouldn't say ask the question. We've asked these questions, what is it going to take or when will it end? But I have another question to add to those. Does anyone out there believe that the state's new permitless carry gun law that went into effect last month has had an impact that may be influencing some of these, or has it had no significant impact at all or not impacted at all? I don't know the answer. Maybe some of you have a feel for it one way or another. Maybe that's not even a question that should apply in this particular situation, because I guess you could argue that if this was targeted, what difference does a permitless carry gun law have to do with the targeted shooting? Maybe it has to do with the fact that that's what young people do now. They settle their, they don't fight, they don't talk, they don't, you know, they don't wrestle. They just pull out a gun, and that's how they solve their grievances. I don't know. But I do wonder because a few minutes ago there was a shooting out on the reported out around 21st and Ritter. The person's not dead, but they are critical. Shootings. I don't know. Do you all think that the permitless carry law is contributing to a larger number, or do you think it's the same old, same old? The law has had no effect one way or another. Let me know what your thoughts are. 317-239-1310. You can tweet us at Community Indy. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, Gina. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What's going on?
Well, same old, same old, same old. You know.
Yeah.
We have talked about this issue a gazillion times.
That was my word, Jeff. Gazillion. Ad nauseum. We have talked it and talked it and talked it, and I mean, I don't know. What is it going to take? And you know, people. A lot of times, I think people make themselves feel better about. Well, that's Indianapolis, or that's
East Side. No.
Yeah, they do. They try to make themselves feel better, saying, "Well, because in a crazy, odd." Kind of way it's justified because, well, isn't that where it's supposed to happen? Because it's the big city and there's a lot. No, that's
no,
kind of
no, the, no, no. Let me tell you something. You
that's the logic.
This.
I'm just telling you.
You got a degree from IU, one of the most prestigious institutions in education in this nation, in the world. Okay, and Japan don't have this problem. The UK don't have this problem. Germany don't have this problem. Australia, and you know, they're economically advanced societies. China doesn't have this problem. What's our problem? The problem is, and getting back to your earlier point, is that the Republicans, and they just ain't Republicans now. I don't want to feel like I'm singling them out, but this governor, when he signed that bill, he put corporate interest over public safety. Mm-hmm. Corporate money over public safety.
I would tend to agree.
Yeah,
corporate. Here's the thing. Corporate interest leading back to self interest in terms of political. Yeah, the corporate interest, which underscore his personal interest in politically, politically advancing.
I'm sure Mr. Holcomb gets a nice big fat check from the NRA. What do you think?
Well, it would appear. Some special interest.
Oh, but anyway, but we can talk about this and all of them and all.
We could.
I mean, and mayhem, you know, I'm talking about my mayhem. Me and mayhem don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, but I kind of agree with mayhem on this issue. Maybe we need a vigilantes. Wait a minute. The IMPD just got upset. Now they're looking for me right now. They're handcuffs on me. Because I might be suggesting that we might need vigilantes. Because obviously law enforcement not, their hands are tied.
I think vigilantes would pour gasoline on the fire, though, Jeff. I really do. I don't think vigilantism is the answer at all.
What is it? Is it the music? I know I was talking to a friend of mine today, and I said, these kids don't even dance no more. When I was coming up, we went to parties. We went to dance. These kids don't even dance. They just want to hear about violence, talking bad about women, and
have you been to an event lately? They don't. And if they do, it's kind of like profile. They don't dance together or with people.
They all get out
in a group and profile. You know.
I mean, I used to go to the nightclub and look forward to dancing with a beautiful woman. You know what I mean? But these guys, they don't dance. All they want to do is shoot people. When I go to Faces with somebody back in the day, I'm telling on my age. Well, hell, I'm 63. Just turned 63. But
happy
anyway,
birthday. Mm-hmm.
Well, happy. Yeah, thank you, Tina. But I'm just saying this. They don't, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, we say, you know, yeah, these guys, they don't even dance no more. They don't interact with each other. All they want to do is just feel like, you know, if I pull out a gun, somehow they live in this fantasy world that, you know, they think, P. Diddy and Lil Wayne gonna bond them out of jail or something. I don't know. Is it the music? I think the music doesn't help.
You know, you cannot escape certain cultural influences. You just can't.
But
putting one thing as a direct result is hard because everything is so intertwined. You see what I'm saying? Everything is so connected.
Yeah. And that's the problem, because there's just not one silver bullet to solve all these problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it mom and dad? Sure. I mean, that's first place you go. Where's mom and dad? Why is a 16-year-old hanging around people with guns? I mean, when I was that age, we didn't walk around with guns or nothing like that. I mean, we took it out. You had a problem, beef with somebody, you took it out to the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it made the best man or best woman win, you know, and after that, you was buddies again, you know.
But never, now, never, ever, ever considered pulling out a gun. That I don't
never,
remember.
Never. I mean, I used guns before. I mean, and quite frankly, I'm kind of scared of them. You know, even though I'm a veteran, you know, mm-hmm. you know, do I own guns? Well, that's to be debated if I own a gun or two. But anyway, but I'm all for the Second Amendment. But it's just this law that this asinine law this governor came up with. It's not helping.
No.
It may not be the problem, but it may not be the problem.
Okay, I like that. You know what? Thank you, Jeff. That's an interesting perspective. It may not be the problem, but it certainly is not helping. I like that answer, Jeff. Thank you. Because that's a perspective that we need to examine. It, you know, while we maybe it had nothing to do at all with this shooting of this 16-year-old in Johnson County. But, you know, certainly the fact that it exists doesn't help any situation where gun violence is concerned. So very good point there, Jeff. I appreciate that. 317-239-1310, 317-239-1310. Shooting, you know, do a quick recap for you. 16-year-old shot several times and killed at a school bus stop this morning in Johnson County in Greenwood, in a Greenwood subdivision, a student at Whiteland High School. It's believed that they were gunning for him, whoever it was that shot him. That's what the police or investigators are saying. They believe it was targeted. And right before I came on the air, the reports were that investigators had indeed located a suspect in this particular deadly shooting. We've asked several times, as Jeff and I both said a gazillion times, what's it going to take or when will it end? My question does the newly enacted permitless carry gun law, what do you think that had to do with this or any of them? Maybe it doesn't have to do with any of them. I don't know. Jeff said maybe not this one, but it certainly doesn't help in the aggregate overall. And I cannot help but agree with that one. That's a good point. Very good point. 317-239-1310. You can tweet us at Community Indy. Brother Ahmad, hey, how are you doing? Haven't talked to you for a while, my cousin.
Hey, cuz, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
I saw you on Facebook. I saw a couple of things on Facebook.
This situation, I don't think necessarily the gun laws probably has something to do with it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It does definitely give access to young people who are not mentally mature.
Absolutely. Okay, that's another good point. Yeah.
If the kid was targeted, that's the situation, or else it would have been more of a mass shooting. But since it was targeted, this is something that was very intentional.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It probably has a lot to do with social media beefs and things of that nature, which is bad because kids put their feelings out there, and then they don't have conflict resolution skills,
mm-hmm.
and so therefore they act irrationally once again because they're not mentally mature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that this particular gun law. I'm a Second Amendment advocate, also, mm-hmm. as you know, we were raised with guns,
But it's a different kind of gun, Ahmad.
I don't care, a different gun culture
you're talking about. You're not talking about this gun culture. I know exactly what you're talking about because hunting and fishing, sportsmanship.
Yes.
That's what Jeff and some of the others who say that they're Second Amendment supporters as well, because it's sportsmanship and other things. It's not this. But anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. It was the fact that people were hunting for food, not hunting down other people.
Right. Right.
And so I think the gun law does have slightly something to do with it, but I don't believe it was the overall cause of this particular shooting.
Okay.
So, what I will say is what I have noticed on the streets of Indianapolis, I'm looking at babies. When I mean by babies, I'm looking at young people old enough to be my children carrying guns everywhere.
Yes.
And it doesn't scare me because I'm not afraid of guns. But then also at the same time, I don't know these particular young people's mental state, nor what kind of household they come out of, nor what their particular triggers may be for violence or aggression. So you have to treat these young people somewhat gingerly in how you approach them and deal with them. But a lot of it, like Jeff was talking about, what you said before, a lot of it stems out of the home and whether parents teach their children conflict resolution skills and how to handle real life situations and realize if you make a choice, it could be a permanent choice for the rest of your life. And I'll give you a prime example of what I say, babies walking the street. Probably about 4 weeks ago, I was in my backyard. I had me a little bonfire going, sitting there. It's probably about midnight, maybe a little bit after midnight. And I hear my Ring device go off. So I look at my phone and I see somewhere between 8 and 10 young people walking past my house. Mm. So, okay. So I peep over my fence to see what's going on. As they get down closer to the corner store, and it's the summertime, they all have on hoodies, masks, and they're all carrying guns.
Oh, my goodness. Every single
one of them.
My goodness.
So I immediately go on alert because I don't know if they're going to go rob the neighborhood variety store, try to break into there, or if they're casing houses. So me as being me, who I am, I alert my family. I send everybody upstairs, and I patrol my house with my weapons. Because, and I mean outside, because I don't know if these kids are going to do a B&E or breaking and entering. I don't know if it's a home invasion. I don't know what this is, but I'm definitely going to protect my physical property, my family, and my neighbors, because I know my neighbors. I'm not out here to harm, to kill anybody's child, but at the same time, I'm going to protect those that I love and those that I feel that may not be able to protect themselves either. Mm-hmm. And once again, I don't want to harm anybody's child, any person's nothing, but this law, in a sense, has allowed these young people to walk the streets carrying guns, and I see this on a regular basis, and it's almost going to be frightening to some people who do not know how to handle people that carry guns and then speak to them rationally enough so they can be able to, so you can disarm them mentally, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, and mm-hmm. in the same essence, be able to disarm them physically. Mm-hmm. So it definitely is a problem, especially mm-hmm. if people, regardless if you're an adult or a child, do not have weapons training second, and then conflict resolution first.
Yeah, and Brother Ahmad, that's quite a high level skill, and I admire you for that, and I applaud you for that. Your statement that it doesn't scare you to see somebody with a gun because you have the skill set in your wheelhouse. I don't have that skill set, and I have to tell you, it mm-hmm. does scare me when I pull up to the gas. I've shared this story before. I pulled up to the gas station, and a young man, you know, like you say, definitely young enough to be my son or my child, a very young man pulls out with a gun that goes almost all the way down to his knee, attached to his, and he's not smiling. He's not looking like he's engaging in anything. I stayed in my car until that man finished his business because I didn't know. And it caught me so off guard, and it so disturbed my sense of peace and everything else that I had to calm myself down. Now, I'd like to think that I would be rational and be able to use some of the skill set that you talk about. But you already have it. I mean, it's a trigger for you. It's an automatic. You already have it. But most of us don't have that. And that's where the concern lies. That's where my concern. And I have to say, I'm like, what is going to, I didn't know, should I pull off? Should I not? Should I, you know, you're just kind of thinking, you know, you're thinking through all the possible scenarios. And my first thought was, what in the world do you need to be showing that gun for?
Right.
Why are you showing it? What are you going in the store? What are you going into the store for? What are you coming out? It just goes through you.
And it does really make you wonder. I remember still being young and carrying guns, and once again, that's because I grew up in a different culture of understanding how to handle guns.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And some of these young people just do not.
No,
and that's the problem. And even when I have an 18-year-old at home, and even when I tell her when she goes to the gas station, you know, use your situational awareness. If you hear an argument going on, whatever,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
pass up that gas station, get back in your car, leave.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't leave your vehicle running. You know, make sure you take only what you need going up there. You know, just things to keep her safe. So it won't turn into an issue of some sort later.
Mm.
But
it's a shame we all have to live like this, isn't it?
It is. But I honestly believe we still cannot be scared of our own people. You know, we still have to meet them on their level where they are for whoever is properly trained to do that. Whether it be average citizens, whether it be your police department, whether it be your fire department or social workers, whoever that it is, we need to have honest conversations and not just stop at the conversation point, but honest actions of engaging young people mm-hmm. and asking the question, why? Why is it that you actually need this to walk up and down the street?
Yeah, why are you
saying that? And have things like that. And if you're involved in any type of business like that, just ask, I mean, continue to ask the question, what is it that you need to do in your life so that you will be able to see past 25? Be
yeah.
past 30 years old in your life?
Yeah.
Or do you think that, you know, your maximum age of being able to live statistically is 18 or 20 years old? And mm-hmm. that's honestly a shame if kids honestly think that way. But once again, they're not being interested. They're only given one scenario in life. And if we don't, if our community leaders, if the general public, small business owners don't offer an alternative or a different option in life to show these kids that, hey, there is a different way of going out here, then the cycle is just going to keep funneling downward.
Yeah, and I don't want to hold you too much longer, Brother Ahmad. In fact, I'm going to let you go. I know you got other things
sure.
to do, but how do we balance that against popular culture, which has such a hold over the minds of the young people that don't understand so much of this is an act, so much of this is a money-making
right.
venture, that so much of this is not your reality? How do
right.
we have to strike a balance and figure out how to combat that, because popular culture has the attention and the loyalty and everything you can think of these youngsters way more than a lot of groups and organizations. We've got to figure out how can we strike a balance. So what are your thoughts on popular culture?
Popular culture, I learned a long time ago, images shape your reality.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to introduce a scenario first, starting in the home. That is where it is.
Ugh.
It all really begins. It's at home, for parents to remove devices and the televisions from your children's hands. And if any young parents are listening on the radio broadcast, if you have you only need one television in your home, from literally from age zero, probably to your child as a teenager. And the reason I say that is
mm-hmm.
you can monitor everything that comes inside your home. If you don't do that, you're going to allow society and popular culture to dictate the way that your child
yeah.
thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Do not think that just because a device is in your child's hand that somebody is not influencing them
mm-hmm.
to think and act a certain kind of way. And if you wonder why your child typically rebels, because all children rebel,
yeah.
it's just in our nature to. But if you're wondering why certain things are coming about, 9 times out of 10, it is the device in their hand, or it is whether they're watching on television, and or it is the social group that they have, where that social group
peers.
Is being, once
yep.
again, their mm-hmm. peers are being influenced by these negative sources that are changing the attitudes and minds of our children, which is becoming a toxic society. And mm-hmm. you're wondering why we cannot keep control of our children, or we can't manage them or train them up in a proper way.
Yeah.
So the parents have to be the front line, above and beyond before kids even get to school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. All right, Brother Ahmad. Well said. Thank you so much. Good hearing from you.
Good hearing from you, too. Please be safe out here.
All right, you too. 317-239-1310, 317-239-1310. A lot there in that call with Brother Ahmad, as there usually is when he calls. Very, very thoughtful young man. And I, you know, the more and more and more you think about it, it has to be the parents. It has to start in the household, like Brother Ahmad said, before they even get out of the house. But if the parents have their values and priorities and everything screwed up, then, my goodness, where do you go from there? But another day, another show. I'm on that. 317-239-1310, or you can tweet us at Community Indy. Brother Imhotep, go ahead. How are you?
Hey, Tina. Thanks for taking my call. And it is exasperating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had practice at the other day, soccer practice, and I had six of my children. First, I thought I was going out of town. Just full disclaimer, I thought I had to go out of town Tuesday or something, but then it ended up getting canceled, the business trip. So I emailed everyone early Monday morning
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that I wasn't going, and I emailed everybody. I mean, I'm sorry, I texted them and emailed them on the
mm-hmm.
list,
mm-hmm.
and three responded. I've got 9 on a team, and I only had 6 show up. 2 of them were of African-American descent. The rest wasn't. I'll take it a step further, Brother Ahmad. You know, Oh, first of all, I want to comment on gun violence and gun crimes. We have more reporting and we have more social media now, but let's not forget the Wild Wild West has been thrown in our face for a long time. Mm-hmm. Dirty Harry, Clint Eastwood, mm-hmm. thrown in our face for years.
But we were talking about the cultural influence.
No, he said that people weren't going around. Brother Mott had to, I got to kind of push back a little bit when he said no one was going around shooting people back then. Yes, they were. We know for a fact there's probably over 250,000 lynchings of black people during the Jim Crow era, either shot or hung. So we do know that is a fact. So certain people were going around shooting people. Black people on the whole weren't going around shooting people then, like we see the problem
I think
the last
that, yeah, that may have been more
years
what
now.
Yeah.
Right, started in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Starts in the home. Parents, but I'm going to push it a little further to strong males. My son and his wife have 7 children. She's a great mother and wife. He's a great father and husband, but he's even a bigger, not playing around man. What I see is certain segments of our brethren, which we keep trying to ask them, no matter what you do honorably, work, it's honorable, but there is a certain segment of our brethren who continue to do things and they perpetuate those images to their children because this is not about one over or this and third. It's just about the natural order things. If you look in the animal kingdom or in the insect kingdom or even in the fish kingdom, okay, when that female's fighting against a herd, here come the male lions coming to the rescue. And so those male fathers, I'm hollering at you, father, or grandfathers who are trying, because I'm helping with my grandchildren, and they know when they come in the home, we don't have any of that playing. Matter of fact, they're so good on the other end, they're playing techno, Herbie Hancock, Farsi, Punjab, jazz, or they're listening to some techno music. They don't even want him. They don't even listen. I played, and I won't even say the rapper's name, I played it the other day, we were riding around, and I said, can you all understand this? I say, Granddad, we can't understand nothing he's saying. I say, see, you definitely don't want any of this. Think about it. You can't understand what he's saying. That's not even communication.
Mm-hmm.
Because communication involves a sender and a receiver, a message and a receiver.
Yeah.
So if you got a sender who's sending a message that can't even be understood by a receiver, then how do we have any communication? And thus, that's the issue. We got a lot of lost people. But I'm calling and championing Dad's got my good friend from years. 20 years, Kareem Himes over there, new boy,
mm-hmm.
trying to do what he can do, great father. I'm champion father. I don't care how old you are. I don't care what your situation is. You can wash cars, and that's honorable work.
Yes.
But we do not need you out here doing and showing your children. You need to have to be leaders. We're at the park the other day. I had that same problem again I told you a few months ago. Got my grandson out there. They're learning how to ride the skateboard in the basketball because it's flat. So they're on the basketball court playing skateboard. Young man's playing basketball by himself, so it's not many people out there at Riverside Monday. This is Monday, yes. And so here comes a young man running over with his gun and extended clip in his pocket. He begins to play basketball, almost dropped the guns out of his pocket as he started playing. So then I told them, you know, it was maybe 20 minutes in, they'd already got some practice in. So I told them, come on, let's go. And so I told this story to an older friend of mine that Monday night, and he said, yeah, and you can't even say anything to him because if you say something to him, they can't take it. I'm trying to go all my skills from Dad, Uncle, Farrakhan, Martin Luther King, you name it, to where I possibly could have said something to him to understand that this children are out here skateboarding. It's a situation that things can happen. He almost dropped it. He fumbled trying to put it back in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you may want to put it up in your car without him taking it some kind of way. But the fact that they're all got this ops mentality now, and I've been versed on this ops stuff now the last 3 or 4 months. I've gotten it down now. That's why he saw him with hoodies on and masks. There's an ops thing, Brother Mott. They got this 63rd and old block mentality in Chicago, which that's the worst thing to have. Okay, so this is why they think you can't say anything to some of them because it's deemed already that it's a challenge. So the challenge is the home is correct, but I'm calling on these fathers. I'm calling on granddads and uncles, men, elephants, the pride. I'm calling on the pride
to come in and help a militia, Jeff, and we ex-military. You can't, the United States government only one time, and that's to move headquarters, bomb their own people. They're not going to take up arms against their own citizens. They're just not going to do it. And that's unwise anyway, because then you're going to have a lot of innocent casualties running around in the city streets. And then what? You're going to have more collateral damage in these city streets around these corners, these alleys, and everything else than it is people you claim to be looking for. Think about it. The National Guard went to Chicago when Trump wanted to send up there. They got on the street, FBI, they got on the street, and in 3 days they said, nope, we can't do this. Because those corners, those alleys, those blind spots, them city streets, that's jungle warfare almost. And they can't, they're not going to do it. It's going to have to start with us at home, us men, good people like you, Tina, Kareem Hines, my brother, and Urban League, and whoever else that can stand up and start with the young. Because until, once a child or a person gets about 18, 19, 20, they got to bump their head. I'm sorry. They're going to have to bump their head hard.
Yeah.
And they may, like Charleston White say, have to do some time and sit down and find themselves.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can help them after the fact. That may be after 18 or whatever.
Yeah, some so-called adults. Yeah.
Right, you know, and
some of them just going to have to go. Happen. No, I hate I hate to see it too, but what else can you do? I mean, what do
what
you
else
do?
Can you do?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't understand the gravity of taking someone else's life, then I'm sorry for you, but that's the reality.
And then rape and raping and culture and everything is gone.
All the other
teacher,
stuff, yeah.
Just had this teacher, another teacher. And then I'll finish with this. The teacher at Beach Grove. And from what all the county had a small amount of cocaine.
Oh, the cocaine cocaine teacher, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had a small amount with him. 46, 47 years old. I take it that probably he had more of a user problem. He probably was taking stuff to some friends. But he quit and resigned, and here's a lost cause at 46 years old. I don't consider that person a dangerous person. And we should try to help that person, because I know someone's son who goes and plays basketball. They were freshmen last year at Beach Grove, and they're going to play as sophomore, and he would have been their coach. And the mother was angry, like, well, they didn't have to do that to that man. Here I go back to the new Jim Crow. They've done that to black folks for years. Jamie Foxx says dad gets 7 years for $25 worth of dope. So they've done that for years. The country doesn't want to rehabilitate. But that's the type of people we need to try to help. He's probably got a health problem. We can get him at 46 years old. We don't want him to lose everything. Then he becomes nothing to the system. So that's the other side of
it. Yeah, that's the other extreme. Yeah.
Things happen. But for the people running around, like at the park the other day, Charleston White said, and I agree with him, they're going to have to bump, get their heads bumped. Maybe they need to sit down for a while and find themselves, and then maybe they'll understand where they're from. We got to start with that zero to probably 13.
Yeah, yeah.
13, 14, and try to make sure that they're okay.
Indeed.
Because a certain segment from 16 to 21, they're going to probably have to just learn by example.
You'll have to learn, yeah. Thank you, Brother Imhotep. Appreciate it. And recalibration is certainly in order. And, you know, some of these parents are going to have to take a hard look at themselves as well. Which is not an easy thing to do. I'm, you know, not passing judgment or anything like that, but hey, the fact of the matter is, it has to start there. It's not a judgmental thing, it's a fact. It has to start there. John, go ahead. How are you?
Yes, good afternoon, Tina.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Tina, I thought about the school bus shooting.
Yes.
Okay, they said the victim was shot several times.
Shot several times, yeah, and targeted.
All right. Mm-hmm. And something, a light bulb went off in my mind saying, maybe it was an act of bullying and retaliation.
You know what? Here's the
and
thing, though, John.
Get the gun.
Here's the thing, John. What difference does all of that make? You picked up a gun and took a life.
Yeah, I understand.
You
that.
Know, but I'm tired of the maybe it was this or maybe it was that or maybe it was. Stop it. You know, thank you, John. I'm sorry, but I just can't go to the maybe it was this or it has to stop. Just like our last two callers, Brother Imhotep and Brother Ahmad, I could not have agreed with them more. Something has to be done. It has to be you've got to strip it down to the bare bones minimum and start again somewhere. Recalibrate, reprogram, refocus the limb, whatever you want to call it. But if we say we're backing away from the horrendous nature of what's taking place out there, if we are saying, well, what? No. Stop. It has to stop. Marvin, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Marvin.
Hey, Tina.
Hey, Marvin. How are you?
I'm well. You know, I look at it like this. I'm going to roll my windows up. I'm in the car.
Okay.
We had a young man executed on the bus stop this morning.
Executed. Yeah, basically, executed.
Yep. And so I look, you know, I kind of got off Facebook. I've been seeing our community leaders fussing and fighting amongst each other about who's doing what. And obviously nobody's doing anything. And I don't mean that nobody's doing anything. But if you get what I'm saying, we need to stop focusing on who's doing what and I need this recognition and this person. We have these young people dying every day. That should be our focus, Tina. And, you know, and it's a joke. And then, you know, I'm going to be frank, our Caucasian brothers and sisters see this, and they're like, what in the world is going on? They're fighting over who's doing this and who's doing that. And every day we turn on the news and there's a murder. This young man was executed on the bus stop.
At the bus stop
waiting
to go to school.
Something has to be done.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear, well, maybe it was this,
but,
or maybe
right.
It doesn't matter anymore. Those things don't matter. What matters is the ultimate, which is picking up a gun and deciding that this is how you want this situation to go.
There you go, Tina. And
wrong.
We have to decide as a community and community leaders to refocus on what is really important. It's not about accolades.
Mm-mm.
It's not about getting grant money and going to the Caribbean. It's not about it's not about you. It's about these young people that need our help.
Young
and
people,
Tina,
and young families
a voice
need
for
help.
It is because it's sad, and we got to quit making the excuses, and we got to get out and do the work and do it sincerely from our hearts, not because we're trying to become social media famous or thinking nonprofits or a new hustle. These kids need our help, and not excuses.
Exactly.
Our help.
Thank you. Thank you, Marvin. So very well said. I appreciate it. Pastor Tracy, go ahead. How are you?
I'm doing well, Tina. How are you?
I'm doing well, by the way. By the way, thank you for the book. I haven't read it yet, but in fact, our mail here is very, very slow because our station is still closed, so I just got it yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is real slow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, go ahead.
But anyway, I think one of the issues is that we have in society is we think that guns provide a measure of protection, and guns do not provide protection unless you shoot first. They're not shields. And so when you have a society who has to measure up and feel you have to get a gun, it becomes an issue of who shoots first. And I think with the way we are today, everybody's on edge. It becomes a little hostile, and we're already a violent society.
So
with that in play, guns become an easy answer to resolve their situations or just their problems. So what I want to look at is I think we need to tap into the conscience of our nation. It's because sometimes when you pull that trigger, you have to live with the consequences for the rest of your life and even after.
So there's no thought behind that. There can't be because there are too many of these shootings, Pastor Tracy. There cannot be.
Exactly, and that's why there was a young man I was called over to counsel to calm him down because a gun had been pulled out on him, and he ran home, and his grandmother called me over to talk him down, and he kept, I got to measure myself, I got to get myself together, I got to get me a gun, and I calmed the situation down by one question, then what?
Then what?
Made him think about the consequences, about what would happen afterward. And to this day, that gentleman now still thanks me for that just one conversation. And so I brought that in, teaching my son, don't look at the now what, think about then what. Don't do something and then think.
Afterward.
Think
before you do it. And thank you, Pastor. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I think we got time. We can squeeze in maybe one more. Then what? You know, what now and then what? I love that. That's a great mindset to try to instill upon a lot of these young people. George, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today, Tina?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Hey, I come from a different viewpoint, so I don't want to upset anybody, but maybe I will. So I'm kind of play devil's advocate here. What I'm hearing is a lot of people speaking out of fear. Fear their young guys in the community. And I know there's a guy named Joe Madison out of D.C. who says the stallions lead the herd, not the ponies. And that's what we have going on here. The ponies are leading the herd. And there was another gentleman that called on your show, and he said, well, we've lost the lost our way, lost our leaders and all this thing. But I grew up in Indianapolis, and I grew up in New York City, in Harlem. And we have lost our way in a sense that we have no way of reflecting back on what organized our communities back in the 70s and 60s and 80s. In that time, there was crime, but there was bosses, lieutenants that controlled crime. And these young guys that are out here doing this stuff now, if those same elements was going on nowadays, where you had people who were in organized crime that protected the neighborhoods, we wouldn't have this kind of thing, things that's going on. That's my perspective.
Okay, I got that, when you, George.
When you had a days like a Bumpy Johnson, a Sam Giancano.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, George. With organized crime, they weren't protecting the neighborhoods. They were protecting their personal interests. They were terrorizing the neighborhoods. The respect that they so-called had was nothing but fear. You talk about fear, there's nothing but fear when you're talking about organized crime, because that's how they made their money, that's how they made their mark, and that's how they controlled what they needed to control. Fear. Fear. And if you don't do what I say you're going to do, then I'm going to take care of you. I don't see that. I don't see putting people in a perpetual state of fear either. That's not leadership, George. Organized crime is not leadership. It's just not. Andrea, I got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, Tina?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I got a couple of comments.
Well, we don't have time. You just tell me what it is, because we got to be out of here. We got another guest coming. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say, you know, that's why they had the Pastor Harrison,
mm-hmm.
What's that group that they have?
10-Point Coalition, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they need, you know, to have more people in that, you know, patrolling the buses. They need people.
You know what? And there used to be a security dads and the 10-Point Coalition. I see what you're saying. More visibility with more people in the neighborhoods, keeping the neighborhoods under control. Is that what you're saying?
Right, because people are scared to say something like that gentleman talked about with the guy with the gun at the playground, basketball court. But we have to wear bulletproof vests, and people have to get out there. All these little programs and stuff, they have to step up, because they have to teach these guys that that's not okay.
Absolutely. Good point, Andrea. Good point, and I appreciate it. And, you know, it's interesting. We got to get to our next guest in just a bit when he calls in. But people have this glamorized picture of organized crime and crime bosses and what have you. They were very, very, very self-serving. Nothing about them protected anybody but themselves. Neighborhoods. They didn't protect neighborhoods. Bumpy Johnson, Sam Giancano, and whoever else you mentioned. Gangsters, mobsters, hypocrites, thugs. Anyway, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more Community Connection right after this.
WTOC AM, W224 DI, W236 CR, Indianapolis. It's time to discuss the important topics happening in and around Indy. It's Community Connection with Tina Cosby. Brought to you by Child Advocates. Your voice, their future. On AM 1310, 92.7, 95.1 FM, The Light.
And we are back with Community Connection, heading into our second hour. We're going to shift focus here just a little bit to refocus on what we ended with yesterday. Late in the show yesterday, we had just found out officially about President Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness program. A lot of talk around it. Yesterday, the president made it official, and as you can well imagine, some loved it, some did not. We have with us at this hour Rodriguez Murray. He is the Senior VP of Public Policy and Government Affairs for the United Negro College Fund. Mr. Murray, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. I know that probably a lot of folks are reacting, and weighing in on this, I guess, historic move that the president made yesterday.
You're right, Tina. And first of all, thanks for having me on today. And I'd like to say hello to all your listeners, especially those that are historically Black college and university graduates. Mm-hmm. any of the 100 plus HBCUs, and those that any of them that are first generation college students or those that are aspiring to go to college. But you're right, this was a historic announcement. It's going to make a tremendous impact on those that have been burdened by financial reasons for student loans, and we're looking to work with the Biden administration to make sure that this is implemented well and that those who need relief the most are the ones who get the most.
Yeah, and it is interesting because what a lot of people, I think, are overlooking is that student loan debt, like so many other things in our society, COVID, you name it, disproportionately affects African Americans in larger numbers and with larger balances. And so will this help in any substantial way? I know the overall idea that President Biden was saying on along the campaign trail was to narrow the wealth gap, to narrow that. Do you think that this, the $10,000 or up to $20,000 in Pell Grant situations, do you think that this is going to help in any substantial way in achieving that that goal?
Absolutely. So, first of all, it's pretty historic because what you find here is a president that's actually using a lens of equity and not equality. And so the old adage is that a rising tide floats all boats. Mm-hmm. But what if you're in the boat that hasn't risen well, no matter how much the tide comes in? Mm-hmm. And that's the position that many African Americans have found themselves in, even when they show the aptitude and they make it to college, because of the systemic financial conditions of the country, those individuals tend to be burdened more with debt. So it's not because of the college that they go to and how much the college costs. Those, there are systemic issues, financial and otherwise, that help make sure that they are burdened more. And so for a president to look at a population and say, I'm going to give everyone that qualifies relief, but I'm going to double the amount of relief and make sure those that are coming from underserved backgrounds will be first at the table and get more, providing equity. I don't recall a presidential administration in any decisions that they've made that have been this wide scale and impact this many millions of people to make equity a large portion of that decision. And this may not be all that some people want, but the fact that the president and the vice president are putting equity in the discussion and making it so that those who need help the most get the most help, that is an outstanding recognition that more needs to be done in this country to level the playing field so that we can all achieve the American dream.
Yeah, yeah. And so roughly how many African Americans do you think are going to see some relief, if not absolutely be, you know, cleared of debt ultimately with this measure when it goes into effect?
In the millions.
Okay,
possibly. This is going to be tremendously impactful. Just in the HBCU community, we're going to see probably hundreds of thousands that are getting relief. And then in the overall African-American community, they're going to be people from, you know, just starting their career until well into their careers. And I mean well into their careers, thinking about retirement, that are going to see this relief because our community tends to hold this debt so much longer because we had to tackle so much more just so that we can get the higher education level.
Yeah, and Mr. Murray, speaking of HBCUs, which have, you know, it's been common knowledge that financially they've been struggling. A number of them have been struggling over the years just to stay afloat, and it's important that they stay relevant, not only afloat, but that they stay in business and stay relevant. So will this measure force HBCUs and other colleges, as some analysts are saying, to continue with the high cost of college or even raise the cost? Or how, you know, how is this going to impact what it costs for students to be able to attend these universities? Or will it at all?
Well, Tina, the first thing we have to understand is that HBCUs disproportionately educate underserved students from underserved backgrounds.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And how I can measure that, Tina, is that 70 to 75% on average of our students come from underserved backgrounds. So that means we have to keep our cost lower than our competitors.
I see.
So the cost of an HBCU education is almost by every measure lower than other types of higher education institutions. And what this is doing is impacting those student populations. Now, the Biden-Harris administration has done other actions that are helping HBCUs. You may know that over the last 2 years plus, Congress and the last two administrations, including Biden-Harris, have provided some $6.5 billion with the B dollars that have helped to stabilize these institutions throughout the coronavirus pandemic. And we've not lost any HBCUs during this terribly turbulent time frame. These institutions are making the case to philanthropists, to government leaders all across the country that they deserve more funding. As a matter of fact, UCF just released a report this month called Greater Funding, Greater Needs, because we have to make sure that equity is included. And if we've been underfunded for 150 years and we're the best price tag in higher education, and we're the best way for underserved students to get up to the middle class and beyond, then we should be supported more. So this action here is very much student-focused, is very much graduate-focused. But there are many other actions that are focused on the institutions.
Yeah, indeed. And so you said when you first started speaking that you and others are going to do everything that you can to see to it that these funds are distributed fairly and equitably and to as many as deserve that. So how do you plan to do that, and how soon will students and parents, I guess, too, because I understand it's parents that help the students. Parent Plus loans are also, and a whole bunch of other, you know, students, graduate students, parents. How soon will they start seeing this reduction in their loan debt?
It'll be before the end of the year they start to see this, but there's a process that has to be undergone.
Okay.
And we're going to help get the word out to make sure that everyone that qualifies gets what they deserve, because these are functioning citizens helping to make our economy hum and sing like
absolutely.
And so we have to make sure that they're getting everything that they're deserved. You know, this is this is historic, and you have to meet people where they are. And so everybody, I wish everybody in Indiana was listening to your show, Tina. Mm-hmm. But for those that aren't.
I do, too.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
But we have to go out and find them, meet them where they are, get them the right information, and make sure they're getting the relief that they deserve, because they have truly earned it for the outsized role that many of these students, especially the underserved students, the students that are coming from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, the role that they play in the economy is really second to none.
Absolutely. And so the process that you say, it's not overly laborious or complicated, is it? Or does it look like it might be? Or what do you think?
I don't think it's very overly burdensome, but I'm going to tell you what, Tina. You tell me I'm going to get rid of $10,000 in debt or $20,000 in debt. You bring me the paperwork, I'm going to figure out how to get through it.
There you go. I tell you what. So if people need help with understanding more of this and finding out more about it, do you know of a place where they can go, or a website or a resource for folks to get started in this process?
Yesterday in the president's speech, he laid out a website that allows for folks to go on, learn more, and maybe even begin the process. And I suspect that whitehouse.gov, whitehouse.gov is your starting place, because this is the marquee news of the day. It's going to have the headline banner there on the White House site, and you'll be able to navigate from there.
Whitehouse.gov. Okay, we got that. And I'm sure Ethan, our technical producer, is going to have it on our website as well. Mr. Murray, thank you so, so very much. This is exciting news in so many ways. And thank you for coming on and helping make it clear. And maybe we'll be talking with you again. You made it clear today. You made it plain. All right. We appreciate you.
And you should always feel free to reach out to me. And Tina, I'd be remiss if I ended your show without saying to your listeners that if they want to contribute and make things better for students at historically Black colleges and universities, they should go to our website, uncf.org. We still believe in our motto. a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you for closing us out with that one. I appreciate you. Mr. Rodriguez Murray, thank you so much. Senior VP of Public Policy and Government Affairs with United Negro College Fund. Thank you again, sir.
Talk soon, Tina. Bye-bye.
We'll talk. Bye-bye. And again, as you just heard, Mr. Murray is the Senior VP of Public Policy and Government Affairs, United Negro College Fund. And he made some excellent points, especially when you consider how predominantly black institutions of higher learning and higher education and students who attend these schools are going to be so positively impacted, positively affected, and positively, absolutely helped as a result. But as I was saying before, here's how some of it is being read. This is a report from ABC News, and it takes us gives us a look at both sides of what we can expect to hear going forward. So here's what you can expect to hear in terms of looking at the other sides going forward. Let's take a listen, Ethan.
Now to the latest on President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan, giving relief to millions of Americans, but not everyone is happy about it. Our chief White House correspondent, Cecilia Vega, has more on that. Good morning, Cecilia.
Hey, Amy, good morning to you. The White House says that this could potentially provide life-changing help to some 40 million Americans, and many of those students who are racked up with that student debt, they are certainly celebrating this morning. But as you said, that criticism is pouring in from both sides of the aisle, with some saying this goes too far and others saying it doesn't go far enough.
This morning, millions of Americans facing mounting student debt on the verge of having their balances wiped clean.
Like a weight was lifted off my shoulders.
President Biden promising life-changing relief to the overwhelming majority of people with student loans, even leaving some 20 million Americans with a zero balance.
All this means people can start finally crawl out from under that mountain of debt, to get on top of their rent and their utilities, to finally think about buying a home or starting a family or starting a business.
The move forgives up to $10,000 for people earning less than $125,000 a year, $250,000 for a couple. It forgives up to $20,000 for low-income borrowers who received Pell Grants, and the pandemic pause on student loan repayment gets extended through the end of this year. While some say it doesn't go far enough.
People who are like already out, it's not really enough for them. They probably need more because of the compounding interest.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell calls it astonishingly unfair, and many Republicans with that same message.
What you're saying here to a whole lot of people in this country is, go ahead, take out loans, don't worry about it. We'll just write it off when the time comes.
ABC's Karen Travers pressing the president.
Mr. President, is this unfair to people who paid their student loans or chose not to take out loans?
Is it fair to people who, in fact, do not own multi-billion dollar businesses? They see why these guys give them all a tax break? Is that fair? What do you think?
For people like Caitlin Pern, a mom of two who owes $25,000, the help can't come soon enough.
It's kind of been a toss-up as to what are we going to pay for, childcare or college. That stress was really starting to pile on, and we didn't know how we were going to make it. Honestly, I'm just so happy.
Well, here in Washington, the really big question this morning is...
You know what? I think President Biden's answer to that reporter's question sums it up for me. I don't know about you guys, but is it fair to people who do not own multi-billion dollar businesses to have to foot the taxpayer bill to bail them out as well? So there you go. I agree with the president. I agree with Mr. Murray. I agree with... I agree with the positive nature of all of this. This cannot be anything but good. You know what? Nothing that comes down is ever going to satisfy everyone. And well, what about the people who didn't who went to college and paid off their debt? Or what about the people who didn't even go to college? What about them? Well, if they didn't go to college, they don't have college debt. Okay, so they don't need it. I'm not trying to be harsh or anything, but sometimes you have to help who you can help, when you can help them, how you can help them. That's it. I remember, and this kind of encapsulates the mindset, too, that I think Mr. Murray, who you just heard from, and the president's answer to that reporter's silly question. I thought it was a silly question. And it kind of encapsulates this, but I remember doing an interview several years ago. It was when they were still at the Walker, and as the guy said yesterday, maybe I'm dating myself, but so be it. You know, hey, I love it. But I was interviewing Tom Joyner over at the Walker Building, at the Walker Theater, and we were sitting down and we were talking. He had brought his Sky Show to Indianapolis I don't remember if it was Black Expo or Circle City Classic. Probably Circle City Classic because it's college football and college, black colleges. But anyway, be that as it may, it was Circle City Classic because we were talking about student scholarships and things. But anyway, Tom and I were sitting there, we were talking, and I was asking him some questions. And I said, you know, you just do an amazing job for HBCUs, Tom. This is absolutely fantastic. How much have you raised over the years and this and that? And so he was just telling me of the journey and the legacy. And he was telling me, he shared with me on camera some of the criticism he gets sometimes. And he said he was doing a similar interview with a white journalist. And they asked, well, how come you don't raise money for kids that go to other colleges or go to, that don't go to historically black colleges and universities? And Tom quite simply said, because this is my lane. This is what I do. They've got people who can raise money for them. This is my heart. This is where my focus lies. This is my mission, which is HBCU. So this is why I'm going to keep my focus on this particular area. And so I think in a way, as Mr. Murray was saying, the president was able to identify a portion of the population at this particular point in time. Okay, what about the people before? What about the people after? Is this point in time, okay? At this particular point in time, this is who he identified. This is what he was able to do. Some people getting up to $20,000, which is probably better than 60% of African Americans or of people, that have gotten student loans, who have gotten Pell Grants, which, that covers an even broader group. But this is what it is. This is who is being helped. Again, how many times have taxpayers had to pay? Everybody's not a farmer. Farmers have been bailed out. Everybody is not in the airline industry. The airline industry has been bailed out. Everybody doesn't have a car. How many times has the automobile industry been bailed out? Everybody doesn't. Airline industry, cars, the farmers, you name it, banks, people don't always bank at a certain place and time. Everybody doesn't do that, but banks have been bailed out. So, see, I just don't, people are going to complain. And that's the other thing. Folks are going to have something to say no matter what you do, no matter how you do it. But if what you do is mostly good and helps a lot of people or most people who need it, then I think that you're good. The criticism is going to come. Let it come. But by all means, let this continue and let this go forth and help these young people who need the help, who can get out there and can now start buying homes instead of renting apartments, who can now start buying cars instead of having to pay for public, nothing against public transportation. But you want to, get out there in the economy and start being able to live like they see other people live without having that huge mountain of debt hanging over their heads. Anyway, William, go ahead. Student loan comments. What did you want to say about that?
Yeah, Tina, I got two talking points I want to talk about. And okay. I want everybody to think, in the past century, which president has attacked the healthcare issue and now the student loan issue? Has any president ever done that?
What do you mean attacked?
Doing something about bringing down the cost and making sure everyone has health care.
Obama did that, yes.
That's my point. He's a Democrat.
Yeah.
That's number one. And Biden is number two on the
student loan debt, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, closing the income disparities, the wealth gap, yeah. Trying to close it. Anyway, go ahead. What now?
Now, these two issues here needs to be the Democrats' talking point going into this election.
Oh, yeah, those and a whole lot more if the Democrats need to get on the stick and start pounding their drums as loudly as anybody can take. I would agree. I would agree with you, William, 100%.
That's all I wanted to say.
Well, that's plenty. You said a mouthful right there. And as far as, the Democrats have to let the public know that they are the ones looking out for their best interest. They are the ones helping, and they are the ones who are not the crazies and the freaks and the weirdos. You know, they're not the ones out there taking Christmas family photos with AK-47s. You know, they're just not. they're not. They got to point out that they got to make a distinction, and they got to make it clear, and they got to make it fast, and they've got to make it firm. So still waiting on them to do that. But
well, they got to do something and do it quick.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Fast, quick, and in a hurry, don't you think, William?
Yep.
Okay. All righty. Thank you for your call. Appreciate you. And we are going to take another quick break right here. I think we've got, we do have Danny Bridges from the Indianapolis Recorder is going to be calling in next. And he is going to tell us about a whole lot of things, including a big blow to the Indianapolis Colts. We'll talk about that.
Let's get back to the conversation. It's Community Connection with Tina Cosby from Isaacs and Isaacs Injury Lawyers, WeWin.com Studios on AM 1310, 92.7, 95.1 FM, The Light.
And we are back with Community Connection, moving right along as we usually do on a Thursday. Indianapolis Recorder sports writer Danny Bridges is here.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, Danny.
No, there we go. How are you?
I'm good. Boy, I tell you what.
I want to offer an apology to you for my inability to read a calendar. And not knowing what day of the week it was for your listeners' sake, I actually contacted the host today and said, I'm sorry we didn't connect yesterday, thinking yesterday was Thursday. But regardless of that, I'm back. I'm better than ever. And I have a calendar attached to my dash of my car as well as the kitchen cabinet. So,
Danny,
from now on, I shouldn't have that problem.
Danny, you know what? You gave me the biggest laugh of the morning. I was driving. I had just left Walmart this morning as I stopped and picked up some cantaloupe. And I was in my car and I said, well, let me check this. And I'm like, what is he talking about? I started laughing. And then I had to think to myself,
what's wrong with this guy?
No, I had to pinch myself too, because I had to think, well, wait a minute, what is today? Because there are days, Dan. What I'm telling you is, I understand, because there are days when I don't know what day it is. So, yeah, that was fun. You gave me a laugh today, so it made me smile. I appreciate it.
I'm glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. I'm calling you from beautiful, and I do mean beautiful, Zionsville, Indiana.
Okay.
I don't know where I'm at. I'm looking for a place to park.
Uh-huh.
There is a one of your sister stations. I guess we can say that now because of the acquisition from Ennis.
Not formally, not just yet. They got to sign the final paperwork next week. They'll do it. Yeah.
But anyway, one of those stations is doing a remote out here in Zionsville. We're going to pay tribute to Robin Miller as part of the show today.
Oh, wonderful! Yes, we are indeed.
I have. You know, it's interesting, when my good friend died back a year ago today.
Was it a year ago today?
Yeah, I guess when you see these things coming from a hospice perspective, the jolt is not quite, I wouldn't say as bad, because certainly his family grieved then and now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was impacted by it. But today was really tough for me when I woke up this morning, saw something that reminded me of him. I mixed a tear with a smile. I have been thinking about all afternoon how wonderfully benevolent and how quietly benevolent he was.
Yeah.
And more importantly, how many people enjoyed his copy, what he wrote. You didn't have to be a racing fan to appreciate his zeal, because quite frankly, sometimes he took off and attacked issues surrounding the sport and surrounding the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the tradition, the history, what have you. And those are separate from, hey, who won the race, who qualified for the pole, and all that good stuff. So today's a bittersweet day for me, but I know one thing. He would cringe to think that we're paying tribute to him. He never cared to be in the spotlight, even when he was talking about things that he was passionate about.
No.
But today I'm going to hoist a ginger ale in his honor. And,
wow.
Yeah. We're going to do that here a little bit later. But
I too worked with Robin. It was on weekends.
Right. I recall it. I wish TV.
Yeah, and on Wish TV, and he was an analyst, he was hilarious.
Robin, all that and then some. Wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He absolutely was. And I guess the word I use for Robin is fearless, because he would say things in such a way that basically, I mean, you couldn't argue with it. He just wasn't afraid to say it. You could not argue with a whole lot of what he had to say. And your article, by the way, this week is wonderful. I read that.
Thank you.
Very nice.
And I hope those who listen to your show, who also read the Annapolis Record, will take time to read a little bit about Robin. He really had a high regard for yourself, Debbie Knox, Leslie Olson, all the people there at that particular time that made that station hop.
Oh, wow.
I think Lee Giles was a fan of Robin Miller. I do believe that. Even Scott Blumenthal to some degree. And those are names that you're listening to.
Why do you say even Scott? I like Scott. Scott was cool.
Yeah, they were administrative for that station.
Yeah, administrative, Scott Jean.
But he had an appeal to all walks of life, so he could talk just as easily to the security guard in your parking lot as he could to your general manager and everybody in
that between. That would have been Grover. Yeah.
There you go.
Robin got along quite well, because Grover was one of these security guards that took exceptional pride in what he did and did not let you move unless he was hovering over you.
It was a safe environment there. I was there a few times, and
Grover
They had it under control always.
Yeah. We were cool under Grover. We knew Grover had it all under control. Grover and Robin were hilarious. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Danny.
I just say that he had a lot of regard for the people that he worked with in television during the month of May. And Robin was so poignant about the fact, and almost proud about the fact, that he said, "I've been fired everywhere." But then he would talk about where he liked the most. And I think Wish was his favorite analyst job, per se, for the month of May. And he had a lot of regard for people who were journalists and who reported every day of the year, not just in the month of May, and then would obviously dip their feet in the water during the month of May for stories that surrounded the event at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But can't say good enough things about my friend and quasi-mentor. I miss him, and today hit me a lot harder than I thought it would.
Oh, wow.
It did. It really did. But you know what? I am so grateful for the time that we had together 30 years. And I'm telling my age that I'm 63. I met Robin in my early 30s. And we hit every little small racetrack you can think of, every hole in the wall eatery, and then some things I can't say on the air as well.
But I can imagine.
I admired him and I miss him. And I think there's a lot of folks who feel the same way today.
Yeah. And again, lovely, lovely article that you
Thank
wrote.
You. Thank you so much.
His opinion on the conflict underway now with what is it, NTT Racing and Ganassi?
Ganassi and McLaren.
Over
who Alex Palou. I said in the article, Robin would take it offense to both parties. He would have said, "Hey, those people representing Palou gave the young man bad advice when they said they could get him out of the contract," and he'd also chastise Chip Ganassi for not tearing up Palou's contract last year after he won the championship and giving him a better deal financially. So
basically, a contract extension.
Neither one of those parties escaped his wrath, but you know what? Mm-hmm. They would have been accustomed to it. They wouldn't have hesitated to pick up the phone and talk to him. That was the interesting thing. That guy could call anyone. He wanted to talk to Roger Penske, no problem. He had his cell phone number. He'd call him. If Penske was busy, he'd call Robin back. Want to call Mario Andretti? No problem. Mario will take your call. But then everybody between the top and the bottom as well, not just the heavy hitters. He was something else. And I can't believe he's gone.
He never raced, though, did he? Physically, did he?
He did, actually. He did have a foray into sprint cars, and bless his heart, he once qualified fifth for the Hoosier 100, which was really a high-end dirt track race. But I got to love Mario Andretti for what he said at Robin's celebration of life. He goes, "Yeah, he was riding, and all of a sudden he decided he wanted to try to kill himself as a race driver," because he did have a pretty nasty wreck one time. But Mario said it so eloquently. He goes, "Yeah, then he tried to kill himself." But it was poignant and it was funny. And those who knew Robin and understood his passion to become
a driver at some level understood, respected, and accepted the fact that Mario's comments were all being made in the most reverent way.
I think, you know, I think I asked him that, and he explained to me that anyone who thinks that drivers are not athletes or athletic, they're crazy.
Oh,
he said,
absolutely.
Because it's,
I mean,
an amazing amount of athleticism that it takes.
Quick story to that effect. I was in St. Louis for the IndyCar event last weekend, and I had a chance to talk with Tony Kanaan. And I said, I don't know how to ask you this, but I said, you're in better shape now than you were 20 years ago. He goes, you're right. And he pointed to his wife, who I guess is quite the fitness guru as well. Mm-hmm. But the point is, you know, this guy didn't have an ounce of body fat on him whatsoever. Toned very well, cycles, works out, and with weights, aerobics, swims. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does just about everything that you can think of that would keep you on top of your game. But when you think about the sheer number of G-forces that these drivers absorb when they are driving a race car, the heat that's involved, your race.
Yeah, that's what Robin pointed out, the tolerance for that heat. You have to be
incredible.
In tip-top shape.
It's incredible. Some guys are in better shape than others, but there's not a guy on the IndyCar circuit who's out of shape. You couldn't do it if you were.
Yeah, that's what Robin said. I remember him telling me that several years ago. So, well, good for you. And please, everyone, if you get a chance, check out Danny's article in this week's Recorder. Danny, speaking of the Recorder, you all have a new editor-in-chief.
We do have a new guy, but he's also a familiar face.
New but familiar, yeah.
And Brandon Perry, who is the quintessential gentleman. That's the first thing I would say about him. And very active politically. Mm-hmm. He will bring an element of keeping people accountable at the city council and the mayor's office, the governor's office. He's not afraid to take that on. And I was very happy to see his appointment. He's a good gentleman. Haven't been able to talk since he's back on the scene, for lack of a better term. But he is an exceptional writer, and he's somebody who's not afraid to ask questions.
Good.
You know, I get along rather well, considering how crazy I am and how conservative he might be at times.
Yeah, well, I invited him to join us today. He's busy, but soon, very soon. But I left the invitation
on that.
Yeah, he's going to take me up on it very soon. And, you know, just for him to say hi to our audience and introduce him.
I'm going to put him on the spot. I don't think he's closed the book on a political career, whether that be a county or a local office. I'm not really sure of that.
Really?
I think he has some interest, but he's 100% dedicated to the editor-in-chief position, and he will he'll do a splendid job. The readers will enjoy his perspective, his opinion editorials, what have you. He's a great choice. The Recorder's lucky to have him.
Yeah, indeed. So tell us what's going on. I understand. Go ahead.
No, you first. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
No, I understand the Colts suffered a gut punch to the season with Rigoberto Sanchez.
Well, after Ogletree, now this.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was a good punter. I mean, there's no other way to paint it. I mean, his net average per punt was a good one. He was also the holder for the place kicker. So you don't just go out and find a reasonable facsimile that quickly. I don't know that the gentleman they signed from Buffalo, last name is Hawk, he had a pretty good year kicking the football last year, but kickers are not dime a dozen, yet it is a revolving door of sorts. There's a contradiction in terms there, but that's something to keep an eye on. I mean, the continuity between a holder and a place kicker is vital with a capital C. Whether it's a chip shot or it's a 55-yard field goal, you've got to have what it takes for that. You know, that has to be a very well-oiled operation, for lack of a better term. I don't doubt that they can, you know, develop a relationship per se, you know, the kicker and the holder in a short time. But, you know, the first kick that doesn't get handled properly or the first thing that goes wrong, someone's going to point to that. But, you know, here's my take. The guy hurt himself running wind sprints. I don't know why a kicker has to run a wind sprint. I just don't get it. Why don't they have their own section on the field where they kick and they show that they're kicking well, and then, you know, they go back into the locker room and then they go home? Now, I'm not saying that it's you know, the fault of the coaching staff. This guy shouldn't have been running, so therefore he wouldn't be hurt. But I don't understand why a kicker has to run when sprints. The only time you ever see a kicker run, there's two times. You know what they are? He'll run and jump on the arms of the holder when he hits the winning field goal, and then occasionally he tries to catch the guy who's running it back 100 yards and he
fails. I've seen
you don't need to be a sprinter to be a good kicker. I don't want to marginalize this man as an athlete, and I certainly am not questioning the coaching staff, but I don't know why he was running wind sprints to begin with. But the bottom line is hopefully he can rehab and be good as new next year for the Colts or another team if indeed he's not able to come back with them.
Yeah. Yeah, that is almost like a freak accident, isn't it? It just doesn't.
Yeah, but I still say the big injury report has to be Shaquille Leonard. I just don't think the Colts are being transparent enough about it. I think he's physically unable to perform, which is an automatic four games right there. If he's back by the sixth game of the year, I'll be pleasantly surprised. That situation is not good, and they're not talking about it, which tells me a couple of things. But the only thing I can verify to you is that this guy is in no way, shape, or form ready to put pads on, and no way, shape, or form ready to test his back in a traditional way, whether that be at practice against his teammates or, of course, against an opponent. Mm. And that's a really tough pill for the Colts to swallow, because when he's healthy, he's on it. He's as good a linebacker as there is in the league. And that is a tremendous jolt to their defense. I can't even begin to describe it. Capital J as far as the jolt. It is it's really a sad situation for him personally, professionally, and for this football team. They're going to miss him in the worst possible way.
Yeah, wow, I hate to hear that. I really do. Otherwise, in terms of what you've seen, do you think the Colts are ready for the season?
Well, they're going to have to be, in one hand. On the other hand, are you ever ready when you've got a number of people that are key? I mean, I'm also concerned about how healthy the offensive line can stay. I mean, last year that was the Achilles heel, no pun intended, for the Colts. And, you know, whether we're talking about offensive tackle, but we're talking about center position. Ryan Kelly's got a little bit of a blip now. They say he's going to be out 5 days, but little things accumulatively add up, and then collectively they come together and haunt you. And look, the Colts' schedule is you're on the road the first week. Oh, you should beat the Texans. Well, you got to beat them. You got to go down there, get off the airplane, be ready to play football, and go out there and control the line of scrimmage. Will that happen? I still think they can beat the Texans on the road, but will they? I'm not convinced to say it's a done deal.
No, we aren't.
Walk in the park. We've seen it before. And, you know, until they erase totally the taste in the mouth of the fans, the season ticket holders, of what happened in Jackson for the last game of the year, you know what? They're still on the clock. That's all I can say.
Yeah. I love that. You're still on the clock is all I can say. So
to be determined, I guess, a good way to look at it as well. It's just it's just not a done deal. And I say that even with a healthy Shaquille Leonard.
Do you think that
same thing in that regard? Because you've got to go do it.
Yeah.
You just can't talk about it and assume, because you think you're a better team on paper than the Texans, that you can stroll into their stadium and get back on the airplane in 6 hours with a W. It just isn't that easy. Winning games in NFL is hard. It's tough to win football games. It's tough to win a division. It's tough to win a conference and, of course, a championship. But these Colts have a lot to prove to their fan base. And you can't blame it on Carson Wentz anymore.
No, you can't.
And hopefully Matt Ryan can stay healthy, and he'll be a leader, and he'll be effective as a passer and decision maker. But so many variables for this Colts team, and that's why I think it's going to be intriguing to watch them play. This Saturday night, they've got their final preseason game. I do think you're going to see Tom Brady put the pads on and throw a few passes. I don't see how he can't do that. Then again, he's missed the whole training camp so far, so he may not be doing anything except standing on the sidelines wearing a baseball cap. But Tampa Bay is, they're going to play their regulars probably at least the first quarter, maybe into the second quarter. Colts are going to have to do that in a similar fashion. So you're going to see some real football for the first 15 to 18 minutes Saturday night, and maybe that's a measuring stick. I don't know.
Yeah, might be. So what else is that? What else you got, or what do you have coming up, Danny?
Not a whole lot. There will be an IndyCar race next weekend in Portland, Oregon. And, of course, the Colts will be debuting as far as the first week of the season. I don't think you're going to see any surprises when they cut the final roster down. There's always someone you think, hey, I thought that guy might have made the team, but doesn't. But I don't think you're going to see any big names.
Yeah, because usually every year with the final cut, you know, and which is also the biggest, typically when you go from what 80 to 53.
Yeah, you're going to see about a 17 man reduction, give or take. Then of course you got the 6 practice squad spots. I think they'd like to keep Sam Ehlinger, the quarterback. I don't think they're going to keep 3 quarterbacks on the active roster. I think they'd like to have him get on the practice squad. But he may draw some interest from the waiver wire from other teams. So we may have seen the last of him. It's not as if he's done quite a bit as a Colt, but he had showed quite a bit of improvement in this camp. He's young. He can throw the football. He's relatively mobile. Those guys don't grow on trees, Tina. Yeah.
How many quarterbacks do you think we're going to carry? 2?
I think you'll keep 2 on the active roster and hope you can keep Ehlinger on the practice squad if someone doesn't pick him off the waiver wire.
But I see what you're saying. Somebody will probably pick him up.
I think someone will pick him up off the waiver wire. I really do.
Yeah, they might. They absolutely might. All right, Danny. Well, thank you so very much. And, again, thank you for sharing with us about your good friend Robin Miller, and we certainly remember him very fondly today on this 1-year anniversary of his passing.
Thank you for saying that, and I can assure you with great conviction and without any hesitation there will never be another Robin Lee Miller.
No, I don't think there will be, Danny.
There never will be. No. Don't accept no substitutes, because he was the one, the only. The mold wasn't broken. The entire factory was burned down after he was produced.
Indeed, indeed. Hey, Danny, we will see you next Thursday.
You will, and I'll make I'll make a calendar note. How about it?
How about that? Okay. I will
Take
see
care.
You then.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right. You too. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And Danny Bridges, everybody. He did give me quite a smile today, because actually he made me think, he made me think about what day it was, because I'm like, wait a minute. Yesterday was Wednesday. Well, okay. Yeah, today is Thursday. But anyway, we all have those moments periodically. Anyway, that's all the time we have. For right now. So always don't forget about our website. We're on Facebook, The Light. On Twitter, we are at Community Indy. And, of course, Willie Moore Jr. on the radio is up next, right after us. Thank you again for joining us. We're going to be back tomorrow with open lines and weekend reviews. So until then, everyone, please be safe, be well, and be COVID-19 careful, because COVID is still here. Yes, it is. Until tomorrow, I'm Tina Cosby, and this is Community Connection. We'll